Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good day. What's up, Ghoul Gang? I hope everyone's having a good weekend. Had a good weekend. Is looking forward to a new week ahead. We are officially fully balls deep in December now. So Christmas is right around the corner. And as such, we are kicking December off with a lovely Christmas classic. In fact, all of our December lineup is Christmas themed. So haunted Halloween lights just falling off the side there. As always, ladies and gentlemen, I am one of your co-hosts. I am Simon.
And I'm Lee.
And welcome to episode number 51 of So I Married a Horror Fan. As we are rapidly approaching our 1 year anniversary. Just want to give everyone a heads up for what else we've got coming in December as we round out the year. So today we are covering Gremlins from 1984. Next week, December 13th, we are covering Better Watch Out. December 20th, we are covering Krampus. And then on the 27th of December, which will be our last episode for the year, we are covering A Nightmare Before Christmas. And as always, don't think we're going to leave you without some extra bonus Friday episodes. So this Friday, December the 10th, we are going to be doing our 5x5 on our top 5 favourite horror of 2021. And then on Christmas Eve, we will be doing our 1 year roundup of So I Married a Horror Fan. So we'll just be looking back on the year that was year one of the So I Married a Horror Fan podcast. And we'll be looking forward to 2022, to some of the things that we've got. We'll be announcing some changes that we've got to the podcast, some new features, some new things that we're going to be trying. And we'll also be announcing our first 2 months of 2022 lineup. So you'll be getting what we're covering in January and in February right up top. And as an extra little bonus for you guys, for all the Chucky fans out there, this Wednesday we are going to be doing a season one spoiler-filled review of the entire first season of Chucky. So that drops this Wednesday, now that is available in the UK. We tried to kind of give it a week or so, roughly, from it starting in the UK and finishing airing in America. So that is coming up on the what day will that be? That'll be the 8th of December. So that will be this Wednesday. And finally, but not by no means least, on the 23rd of December, so the day before Christmas Eve, on Thursday the 23rd of December, we will be appearing over on the Horror Bandwagon channel as part of that Scream franchise month. We will be covering Scream 3 with those guys, so go find them on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at the Horror Bandwagon. And also, if you want some more in-depth Chucky looks, those guys did 8 fabulous episodes on YouTube, breaking down every individual episode of Chucky Season 1. So if you are after some more of that sweet, sweet Chucky content, go over to those guys, follow those guys. And as always, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. Twitter is S-I-M-A-H-F pod, and Tumblr and Instagram is So I Married a Horror Fan, all one word, all lowercase. So get on the social media, get those notifications on for all of the content that we have coming up for the remainder of the year. And it will be the first place where we will be announcing all of our new plans for 2022. But today, we are going to be, what are we going to be doing today? What are the 3 things we won't be doing on this episode? We won't be getting wet.
No, we won't be eating after midnight. We're not sure when we'll be eating, but not after midnight. We're a bit confused on that rule.
We will definitely be keeping the blinds closed and away from those bright lights. Indeed. Because today we are looking at the 1984 horror comedy Gremlins. Mm-hmm. This movie has some real heavyweights behind it. So, written by Chris Columbus, who wrote Goonies, who wrote Home Alone 1 and 2, and directed the first 2 Harold Potter movies.
He did indeed.
Joe Dante directing, man who did The Howling, and produced by old Specky Spielberg, Big Steve.
It was indeed.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, starring me since you stole my bit. Fuck you for one. Okay, starring. Do 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 do. Why is it always do this to me? I'm going to do it this way. So, starring Zach Galligan as Billy, Phoebe Cates as Kate. That's helpful. Hoyt Axton as Randall.
Big Billy's dad.
Oh, dad. I was like, I don't know what his name is. Oh my god. It's not in order. Why is it not in cast order? Corey Feldman as Pete. Oh my god. Guys, I think I'm going to have a breakdown because none of the casting in this is in any way helpful. Yeah, it's just completely out of order. Nothing is in a helpful order of cast.
So you've got...
You do it.
Polly Holiday as Mrs. Deagle. Then you've also got... Yeah, this is really out of order. This really sucks. I know that you've got...
Hang on. I've got an idea. Two whole minutes.
Frances Lynn McCain is Lynn, who is Billy's mother. And then the only other person we really need to know is your boy Big Dick Miller as Mr. Futterman. Because Dick Miller's the man from... For those of you that don't know, Dick Miller has appeared on the So I'm a Horror Fan podcast before. He was way, way, way back in the beginning of this when we did Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight.
Yep.
He's also in Chopping Mall, the original Bay of Blood.
Also, just a quick one, because you missed a great cast member here. Howie Mandel is the voice of Gizmo. Legitimately.
It's a no from me, dog. It's a no from me, dog. Frank Welker, who voices Stripe. I'm pretty sure he's the guy who did the voice of Skeletor in the original Masters of the Universe cartoon.
Maybe. We were not prepared today at all. This is all you've learned from us. Good job, team.
And Michael Winslow, who's the guy from Police Academy who does all the beatboxing and stuff, and he voiced a bunch of the Gremlins. Which I think it's pretty cool. It's pretty, pretty cool. So yeah.
There we go.
What's the thing for this one?
Oh, the thing.
The synapse.
A young man inadvertently breaks three important rules concerning his new pet and unleashes a horde of malevolently mischievous monsters on a small town.
I mean, Nailhead, mate, innit?
Nailhead, pretty
much. That's pretty on the nose there. So I'm going to start with you, as always. Gremlins. Talk to me about Gremlins.
Okay, so I have only seen Gremlins once before, and I was maybe in my late teens when I saw it, potentially early 20s. So I saw it a long time, kind of after the age group you would have watched this film. And I feel much about this film, the same way you feel about a lot of films that I love from my childhood. I saw it way too late, and it does not have the effect that it has on a lot of people, and I feel like it's because I saw it as an adult and not as a child. So, take from that what you will.
But, like, what... So, what is it... Let's start with the easy thing. What is it you don't like about Gremlins?
Most of it. In all honesty, I'm trying to be a little, because I know this film is like a massive part of a lot of people's childhoods, and it's a really beloved film. So I'm trying to not be a complete and utter bitch about it. But I think the plot is meh.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite slow to start, and then the gremlins aren't really in it as much as you would kind of like. I think Billy's a dickhead. I think the gremlins are little shits. I think the only thing I like about this film is Gizmo, and poor Gizmo just gets tortured for the whole fucking film.
But he does get to be awesome.
And Billy's mum.
Yeah.
I love Billy's mum.
Gizmo does get to be awesome at the end, though.
He does get to be awesome at the end. He saves the day. But he's basically just tortured throughout the entire movie. And Billy is a terrible pet owner and should not be allowed to have a dog, let alone anything that takes further care.
See, this is one of the interesting things I find about this movie, because Steven Spielberg, as executive producer of this movie, was well aware of what people wanted and were going to gravitate towards, which is kind of why I think Gizmo's front and centre, because in the original script of this movie, Gizmo and Stripe weren't separate characters.
They were the same character.
Yeah, Gizmo was going to turn into Stripe. But Spielberg put his foot down and said, no, once people see Gizmo,
they're
going to want him to be present throughout the entire movie, which is why they were like written as separate characters. Which I think is kind of right, because the movie does flounder a little bit in places when Gizmo isn't present.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact as well that the human characters are so useless slash unlikable kind of makes you... You have to root for somebody.
Well, right, so let's just go through the human characters in this film. So there's Billy.
Who straight up sucks.
Straight up sucks.
He's literally one of the worst protagonists of, like, any 80s movie.
Like, how the fuck his dog is still going, I don't know, because apparently he can't follow basic care instructions. Yeah. Although saying that the water thing is not really his fault, that's... Corey Feldman's fault.
But... Also, it is kind of his fault as well, because he leaves glasses of water lying around in a room where he has...
An animal he's not allowed to get wet.
So, let's not go easy on Billy. Billy is fucking useless.
Oh, yeah. And then he's just a bit of an asshole. And then there's his dad.
Oh, Randall, who's the worst inventor ever.
Worst inventor ever. Basically, steals Gizmo. Like, I know he pays for him. But
he does a shady black market deal.
For a pet that basically he has been told is way more responsibility than anyone is prepared to handle. Mm-hmm. The teacher who gets a hand on a pet he's never seen before, locks it in a cage, and proceeds to do loads of scientific tests on it.
Yeah.
Also, Billy can after already finding out that it multiplies, that Gizmo multiplies when it's wet, and obviously causes him quite a lot of pain, proceeds to do it again because he's a cunt. The female protagonist, Kate. I don't mind Kate, actually. Kate doesn't really have a point of being in this plot, apart from to be a love interest for Billy. That is her sole point in this plot.
And tell sad shit.
And tell a really sad, horrible death story for her father.
But even like the bit when she's like talking about depression rates over Christmas. And I'm like, that's...
She's just here to be morbid and for Billy to try and get his fucking pants down. That's all she's there for.
Mm-hmm.
There's the fucking neighbour.
Oh, the slightly racist neighbour, Mr. Futterman.
Yeah. Oh, racist neighbour. There is the old lady who wants to fucking kill the dog.
Mrs. Deagle, who's the property owner.
Vile.
Who all of her cats are named after different currencies.
I know.
Which I think is fucking hilarious.
And then the only other real character that you spend any kind of time with, really, is Billy's mum, who is the only adult character in this film that I actually like.
Yeah, she's the only character in this movie with any sense of agency.
Well, she kills
three of the little fuckers, in 2 minutes.
She straight up's just like, I ain't handling it. Like, it's really funny, because we were watching the scene. And first and foremost, she raised a teenage boy with a father who I feel like wasn't around a lot, because he seems to be doing anything except hanging out with his wife and child. She deals with her husband's bullshit inventions on a daily basis and just puts up with it because mm-hmm. she's like, I love this man, even if he's a fucking idiot. And three, she, like, literally straight up realises that the gremlins are trying to kill her and immediately goes, knife, chair as a shield, which I love. She gets, like, a foldable chair as a shield. And she is not having any of their shit. She puts one of them in a fucking mixer.
A blender
and blends them. She stabs one of them to death and she microwaves a third.
Oh, yeah, she sprays it with, like...
oil. It's like,
Fry light. Yeah. And then she just sticks it in the microwave
and sets the microwave going.
Actually, funny, before you carry on, there's a funny moment in the kitchen scene. They had to trim some of that scene down because the scene where she stabs the gremlin to death, they filmed a bit where the gremlin pulls the knife out and they said it was too distressing for children, but... If you watch when she's microwaving it, you can kind of see a little bit of the gremlin pulling the knife out behind her over her shoulder.
But like she says, she straight up kills three of them. Just in like, literally, it's like a 2 minute scene. That woman is hardcore. She's mm-hmm. straight up, she's like, I raised a teenage boy and you've seen my husband. I can deal with your shit, you little fuckers. And then she only kind of goes down because one of them hides in the Christmas tree.
Yeah.
and starts strangling her.
That scene where it's hiding in the Christmas tree is fucking legit.
It is a good scene, I will give that. But that's the sole reason that she doesn't proceed to kill all five of them, is she gets taken out by one that's hiding from her, who throws a Christmas tree on and proceeds to strangle her with decorations.
And then ends up in the fire.
I think otherwise. Oh, yeah, and then, yeah, he gets. But that's. Billy ends up putting him in the fire. That's only because he's distracted. I don't think Billy would have managed it otherwise. Otherwise, I feel like this would have been a really short movie. If his mum was wrong... Because the thing is after that scene, they kind of get rid of his mum. And I'm like, if they hadn't have done that, this would have been a much shorter movie. Because his mum is a badass.
Yeah, I think... Do you know the reason... I think the reason why they have to get rid of the mum is because she is so competent. Like, cause she just would have killed all of them. But in the original script, because this movie was intended to originally be an R-rated horror movie... In the original script, they kill the dog. The gremlins kill the dog.
Aww.
And they cut his mum's head off and roll it down the stairs. They throw it at him. Because originally the movie was written to be like a way more hardcore, like... So the bit where they like eat the Santa guy was meant to be more violent. There was an extra scene where they go through a McDonald's and they eat all the people, customers in the McDonald's. And then there was like a few other extra... I think the scene in Search of Darkness Part 1 or 2, Joe Dante mentions that the scene where they kill the teacher, they filmed that to be a bit more extreme. So, like, he gets a bit more fucked up and there's, like, more needles hanging out of him and it's a bit more bloody. But obviously Spielberg always envisioned it as being kind of like kids a movie. PG-rated film.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I think maybe that's probably why they had to kind of write around the thing with the mum. Once they decided that she wasn't going to get killed, they were like, well... We haven't really kind of put any room for her in the movie, so they had to kind of sideline her somehow.
Also, they were like, she is far too competent.
Yeah, like, that fucking kitchen scene. And, like, that I don't know what the Christmas song is called, but it's like, do you see what I see is playing? And, like, that movie haunted... Like, I saw this movie as a kid, and I'm talking, like, a straight-up, like, 5 or 6-year-old. And this movie in the UK was a 15. And I remember this movie scaring the fuck out of me. And every time I hear that song, like, used to hear that song as a child,
like,
I would always be like, where the fuck are them gremlins at?
Yeah, like, I think it kind of irritates me that they get rid of the mum so quickly because she is, like, super, like, on it.
Yeah, but it's the same as, like, Pete. Pete, like, is in the classroom 1 minute and then he fucks off.
Oh, yeah.
But then... Allegedly, in the novelisation, because you never find out what happens to him in the film.
That is
but
true.
In the novelisation, he apparently feels so guilty about unleashing the gremlins and the neighbour getting killed that he runs away from home. Like, he just accepts responsibility and he just runs away from home.
Oh, Pete.
And apparently Mr. Futterman dies when he gets attacked by the gremlins with a snowplough. He dies in the novel, but in the book, in the film, on the news report, if you listen carefully... They mention that they're going to go and speak to him in the hospital. So he kind of survives, but you don't ever see him again.
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel like there's kind of a lot of little like loose plot threads where characters kind of do just disappear in this
movie.
Because
now you've mentioned it, I was like, oh yeah, fuck, Pete doesn't show back up. But like, he's such a minor character.
Mm.
Also, what I really want to know is what Pete's relation to Billy's family is. Because Pete is like 12, 11... 13, I don't know, early teens somewhere. And Billy is, like, definitely, like, in his late teens, early 20s.
Yeah.
So why the fuck is Pete hanging out with him?
Yeah, but...
Like, are they related? Like, because my only thought was, like, oh, maybe they're related in some way. Like, maybe it's his cousin or something. But it's never addressed. It's just this little teenager hanging out with, like, an adult.
I think he's just one of those, you know, like... When you're younger, like, every neighbourhood has a neighbourhood kid who, like, no one really knows who he belongs to, but everyone seems to know him and everyone seems to be friends with him, and he's always, like, going in and out of people's houses and, like, eating their food. Like, every neighbourhood at some point has had that neighbourhood kid. No one's really sure who he belongs to, but he's, like, Susan's uncle's brother's kid.
I grew up in a mining village, so, like, I know that feel. Like,
yeah.
The amount of people who would just randomly show up at my house constantly, and my mum would be like, whose kid is it? And I'm like, I'm not entirely sure, but
yeah.
I know them. We go to school together. Or, I used it constantly, like, so the road I grew up on, there was, so, it was, like, me, Jake, Katie, Kelly and Amy, Becky... Stacey lived on the corner for a little while, so there was like a massive group of us kids, and we would just wander into people's houses. Like, we'd be on our way home from school, I'd be like, oh, we need a snack, and I would just walk into Becky's house and, like, raid her fridge, and her parents would be like, oh, hi, Lee. You hungry? I'm like, yeah, I just want some food before I head home. So I kind of get what you're on about, like, yeah. But yeah, that was basically where I grew up.
I think that was kind of
people's houses.
Corey Feldman's shtick in the 80s, wasn't he? He was like, small child in a neighbourhood who no one really knows, but he seems to know everything that's going on, and he knows all the adults. Like, yeah. Lost Boys, which came out, what, the year after this? It was 84, Lost Boys, what, 85, 86?
Yeah.
And then Goonies is kind of the same thing as well. Like, they're all a bunch of kids that no one really fucking knows, but they all know each other, and they all know, like, what's going on with this fucking one-eyed Willy's map or some shit. And fucking Josh Brolin's there for some reason.
Let's not go into Goonies, because I know you don't like
it. Yeah, but, like...
I don't want to have to try and explain the plot.
I kind of feel like that's Corey Feldman's thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
And, like, in Friday the 13th as well, he's, like, the weird kid who, like, creates monster masks, and everybody seems to know him, but, like, nobody seems to really know who he is. So, yeah, but, like, this... You can tell this is, like, a... You can tell this is a on-the-cusp-of-being-famous Corey Feldman, because... If this was, like, 2 or 3 years later, he would have been Billy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, blatantly. Or he would have been in a fucking full-size costume playing Gizmo, probably.
But, yeah, no, I just... All of the human characters in this film, bar literally Billy's mum, are all useless.
See, the thing is, though, the movie's not really about the humans. And I kind of, like, that's why I think the humans are very thinly written.
But the problem is that, okay, then we have the gremlins, which is what this film is actually about. And outside of Gizmo, who never becomes a gremlin, we don't really know anything about any of the other ones except Stripe.
Yeah.
Like, there's a fucking army of gremlins at one point in this movie. I'm talking, there must be like fucking 200 of the fuckers. And I gave... zero shit. So I was like, oh, okay.
You say that though, but all of the gremlins have way more personality than the
they do have way more personality, that is true. And there is the cool jazz noir gremlin.
Yeah, there's like the jazz gremlin, there's the gremlin with gremlin, the puppets.
The flash dance gremlin,
yeah.
The flasher gremlin.
Yeah.
There's
the smoking gremlin that's got all the cigarettes in his mouth.
There's the poker table gremlins, there's the girl gremlin.
Well, she's not a girl gremlin, it's a guy gremlin dressed as a girl.
Because
you don't get the female gremlin until Gremlins 2.
Okay. I mean, I don't... Sure.
Also, I want to know, like, how their intelligence level works as well. Because, like, it's such a minor thing, but Gizmo doesn't speak until the end. He kind of says bright light, and then he says bye, Billy, but he can't really say anything else. Whereas, like, the one that the teacher has, he can say yum, yum. But Stripe can say a lot of words, and Stripe knows what things are. So, like, towards the end, he knows exactly what water is, and he knows what a gun is, because he looks at a gun in the convenience store, and he's like, gun. And he knows, like, what the weapons are. Like, when he picks up the chainsaw, he knows exactly what the chainsaw does.
Yeah, they never really address their, like, intelligence level, which I find quite interesting.
Do they learn from things that they see? Or do
I don't
know. Because, like, Gizmo obviously watches TV with Billy. So, like, they foreshadow that he learns to drive, because earlier on in the movie... he's mimicking driving when he's watching the movie. So he's watching the black and white movie and the guy's driving and Gizmo's there with his two hands going... Mm-hmm. And then later on when he's driving, the clip from the film, audio is playing in the background as he's driving. Mm. So I guess it's like... that. Like,
and I mean, he does learn to play piano by watching Billy do it.
Yeah.
So I suppose they learn by seeing.
So I guess they're like infants.
Yeah.
They learn as they go. So
they're
like
highly intelligent infants.
Yeah. So I would kind of guess, and also I guess by the time they reach actual gremlin stage, they're a lot more intelligent than they are when they're Mugwise, but I don't really know. Yeah, like the rules, they play fast and loose with the rules as well, because when Gizmo gets wet, they create the Mugwise, and then when the Mugwise eat after midnight,
they
produce
gremlins.
The eggs. But then at the end of the movie, when Stripe jumps in the water when he's already a gremlin, the gremlins just appear out
See,
of the water.
Okay, so I wonder. So I think if you drop water on a Mugwai, it creates more Mugwais. I know Mugwais and gremlins are the same thing, but for the sake of discussing it. It creates more Mogwai. And obviously, gremlins are created by eating after midnight. I think if a gremlin gets wet, it creates more gremlins.
Yeah, and they bypass the egg stage or the sac stage.
Yeah, they bypass the entire Mogwai bit because they're not being born. Because if you think, the gremlins, the five that we get originally are being born from Gizmo, who is a Mogwai. Whereas the fucking 300 of the fuckers that get born in the swimming pool are being born from a gremlin.
Yeah.
So he's already a gremlin. So I suppose it depends on which stage they're at when water gets dropped on them, what you get.
Yeah.
Also, what I find interesting is that obviously you're told not to get them wet because it creates more Mogwai. What, like, why is it, like, Gizmo, perfectly sweet, cute, lovable, adorable, he's really friendly and nice. Yeah, when he gives birth, they're all mischievous little shits. Like, why?
Yeah.
And they're purposely trying to become gremlins as well because they cut the wire on the clock so they can be fed before midnight.
Wow.
Or after midnight.
I don't know if they want to or if it's just that Stripe is kind of like bullying them into it. Like, you
but
never.
What I don't understand is why they're all like these mischievous little fuckers when Gizmo is perfectly nice and sweet.
But again.
Like, it would have made more sense if they were also quite sweet and then they accidentally got fed after midnight and then turned into these monstrous creatures. Mm. It just confuses the fuck out of me because there's no explanation. Like, I know, like, when kids are born, some of them are sweet, some of them are horrible, but, like, these five that get born are all mischievous little fuckers. Same as the one that gets born in the lab is also a mischievous little shit because he purposely steals food to eat.
But it's like in Gremlins 2, though. They kind of explain that some of the gremlins, like, get their DNA mixed up, and that's why, like, one of them gets injected with spider DNA, which is why he becomes the spider, and, like, the brainy one drinks something, and that's how he... So they explain in the second one a little bit more, like, how they develop the individual personalities and how they become...
But I'm not talking about them all having individual personalities. What I'm saying is that, for some reason, every other Mogwai is little fuckers. Look, I don't know if that's on purpose, if, like, that's what they're actually like, and Gizmo is just, like, the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
Like, he's actually turned out quite nicely, and it's probably because he was raised by the old man.
Mr. Wing.
Mr. Wing. But it's never really explained. Like, I know you said it means, like, so Mogwai means, like, demon.
Yeah, demon, devil, or gremlin. Cantonese.
Yeah. But we're never really explained any of that, so we don't...
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I guess, Gizmo could have started as a little prick, and then Mr. Wing got him when he was a baby and then domesticated him and raised him. Kind of like how you get, like, a feral cat, and you can train a feral cat to become domesticated. Like we did with Bing Bong. When we got Bing Bong, he was on the verge of becoming feral, and then we kind of domesticated him and made him a nicer cat. I guess it's kind of like that. I guess he could have been born and then rejected, and then that's when Mr. Wing found him, and then, like, they are doing, but then saying that, they are doing a cartoon series for HBO Max that explains the origin of the Mogwai.
Okay.
So hopefully, 37 years later, we'll get an explanation. But I do see your point, like, because every one of them that comes out of him is a prick. Like, there's no other Gizmos, there's no other exception to the rule. So I do kind of wonder if that's what, like, happened to him.
Yeah, but it just kind of irritates me that I know, like, it doesn't really matter because it's just a fun movie about gremlins, but I get really irritated when they leave these blaring plot holes. Like, yeah, it's a movie for kids, but there's no reason for there to be a massive plot hole in.
Yeah. It's G2 people.
G2 people. But yeah, no. It just irritates me. I'm trying to be really... I'm not too mean about this film.
So what things did you like about the movie?
Oh, Gizmo. I like Billy's mum.
The gremlins look cool. I mean, you have to admit
So the puppetry work and the gremlins are really cool. And, like, so the funny thing about this is they used to make people, they checked everyone's cars when they finished shooting at the end of the day to make sure no one was stealing any of the gremlins, which I think is hilarious. They, like, security made everyone who left set pop their trunks and, like, let them check their car because the gremlins cost, like, it was, like, between $500 to $40,000 to make per gremlin.
Yeah, and you think, like, that scene where there's, like, loads of them in the bar.
To be fair, like, the thing is as well, is because there's also the big scene where they're all marching through town.
And that's obviously stop motion.
That's obviously stop motion. That's not actual gremlins. That's, like, little tiny figurines. And the scene where they're all in the cinema and the scene where they're all in the bar, there are a lot of puppets. And they've managed to make each puppet just look, like, the slightest bit different.
Yeah.
that you're looking at them going, oh, it's a different gremlin to the one that I just saw, because this one has like a different nick in its ear, or its ears are slightly different, its patterning's a little bit different.
Yeah, its eyes are a bit
different. The eyes are a different shape, slightly different colour, the nose looks like they did such a good job, because there must have been like across the scenes in the film where you actually have a proper puppet gremlin, maybe like 40 or 50 different puppets used. And they've managed to make each one look individual to that puppet, whether it is a slight difference or a little, like, an item of clothing that they're wearing that the other gremlins aren't wearing. I will praise this movie endlessly for the puppetry work, because they did do a really good job. And Gizmo is fucking adorable.
They said, though, the problem with the Gizmo puppet is because the Gizmo puppet was so small, he was the one that broke down the most. But they said there was a day on shooting where they had so many problems with the gremlins puppets that the cast all fell asleep on set and just slept all day. But yeah, one of the things I love about the puppet work in this movie is it's not just the fact that the gremlins are there and the gremlins are good, but they show you a lot of stuff. They show you them doing a lot of stuff, like, and a lot of full body stuff. Like, there's a scene in this movie where Stripe is riding a tricycle and like, and you see it all in camera. He's like on the tricycle and you see his little legs moving. And there's like a scene where, like the scene where he's got the chainsaw. Like, that's a puppet with an actual chainsaw in its hand. You know what I mean? Like, I guess it's not like a deadly chainsaw. Like, it's probably like one that had a different blade on it. But you're still seeing, in camera, in front of your eyes, a gremlin using a chainsaw.
Yeah.
And the scene when the gremlin is choking Billy's mum with, like, the Christmas lights. That whole puppet is in frame. And it's fucking insane. And, like, all the stuff that Gizmo does as well. Like, Gizmo has so many different facial expressions, movements. Like, he looks sad, he looks happy, he laughs, he blinks. He, like, dances, he moves his head. Like, he drives a fucking car at one point.
That is very, very true.
The Gizmo driving the car, I mean, is a pretty easy puppet to accomplish. Because you just put the toy in the car and then just have the car in a remote control. But to see him actually in frame driving back in the 80s, like, this is fucking, this, that kind of level of, like, holy shit, like, and this is why I will always praise practical effects and over CGI effects.
So, on the case of this, just, I know we don't normally talk about it, but, so, all of the gremlins for this were created and designed by Chris Wallace and Rick Baker. Rick Baker, who worked on The Exorcist, he worked on American Werewolf in London, he worked on The Howling. And Chris Wallace worked on Star Wars. They both worked on Star Wars, actually. Like, they did such a good job.
Yeah.
That I feel like we have to actually address the fact that it was these two guys who created them. I know there was, like, a whole company of people who made the puppets. But design-wise and creation-wise, they did such a bang-up job. I feel like we need to address that fact and just give them the praise they deserve. Because the effects on this, and also, like, especially with Rick Baker coming from, like, doing, you know, The Exorcist, and he did some of probably the biggest practical effects and special effects movie-wise, like The American Werewolf in London. Like, I know
the transformation scene is incredible.
Yeah, so I know we don't normally address it, but I feel like they do need a lot of praise. Because it is one of the major selling points of this movie, is how amazing the gremlins look.
And to say this movie's 37 years old, all the gremlins still look legit.
It's because it's puppetry. So I know we've spoken about this a lot, but this is the great thing with practical effects and puppetry and everything like that, is it ages so much better. Like, you look at that transformation, American Werewolf in London, that movie is 40-50 years old now. And that transformation is still one of the best werewolf transformations in the entirety of cinematic history.
And it's all in camera as well, which is incredible.
And it's all practical.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, and it's why I will always praise a film that uses practical effects, because practical effects, A, look better, B, age so much better as well, because the puppets in this, okay, you know they're puppets, you can see that they're puppets, but it doesn't pull away from anything. You're not looking and going, well, that was some shitty special effects, wasn't it? Because it's all practical.
Yeah, and I think as well, it's really noticeable when you have a movie that combines both. Like, for example, Ghostbusters Afterlife. There are scenes in Ghostbusters Afterlife where you can tell that the terror dogs are real.
Like, so the store scene.
Yeah, when Paul Rudd throws the ice cream carton at the dog and it hits him, that's a puppet. When you then see the same terror dog later on chasing the Ecto-1, you can tell it's CGI.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the miner. Like, the miner that goes into the cafe and orders the coffee, practical. Real. And you can tell.
Yeah.
Because you can tell by looking at it.
And this, again, because it looks like it actually exists in the world. This is the great thing about practical effects. And it's why I will always prefer films, especially horror movies. I feel like other films, fantasy as well, practical effects are... Because I think it's... I know a lot of people... I know you don't like the Harry Potter movies all that much.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the creatures in the Harry Potter movies are practical.
Yeah.
And I think that's why those movies are as good as they are. And mm-hmm. it's part of the draw of watching them. Is because it's practical. And it's what I will always praise in a lot of films. Is the use of practical effects. Because it does... It doesn't draw you out of the world. Yeah. A lot of CGI. And you can kind of tell. You're looking at it. You're going... Oh, that's not real. And it kind of takes you away for a moment. Whereas when you're using full practical effects, so like Gremlins, it keeps you in the world. And you don't question for a moment that they're actually there.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are. Okay, they're not real, they're puppets. But they're physically there and people are interacting
yeah.
with that physical creature.
Well, this is like the thing. This is like, I feel like we've gone way off topic. But,
we have, but...
But like, this is why I always say to you that I love Jim Henson so much. Like, for anybody that doesn't know, Jim Henson's, like, one of my favourite people. Like, I love pretty much everything that Jim Henson ever did. And I think that the legacy that he left behind was incredible. But to me, even as an adult, some of the most mind-blowing things that they do, and it's the smallest thing, and it sounds weird as, like, a nearly 40-year-old man to say this, but every time I watch The Muppets and I see Kermit the Frog riding a bike and it's in shot, I'm always stunned as, like, how have they done that? I can see Kermit the Frog is a puppet on an actual bike riding through a city. And I'm like, how? Like,
but, yeah, it's like anything Jim Henson does. So, like, Labyrinth is one of my favourite movies. There's, like, what,
three actual people in that movie?
There's Jareth.
Yeah.
There's Sarah.
And Toby.
And Toby.
And that's it.
And then, like, in the real world, there's a lot more.
And
then,
like, everything else is puppets, right?
Yeah, apart from the dog, obviously. Yeah. There's a real dog.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty much everyone else. I don't know if, is it Hogarth? The,
he's a puppet,
Goblin.
Bro.
Is he a puppet? Yeah. I'm never sure. I can never remember. Well, I can never tell. I'm like, is he a puppet? Is he not? But most of them, and all their costumes as well. So, like, Ludo.
Yeah.
Is somebody in a giant costume.
Yeah.
But the puppetry work in that film is amazing. And I think this is why... Puppets don't get the respect they deserve in films because the amount of work that goes into something like that and creating creatures that look realistic enough that you don't question it. And this Gremlins does it amazingly well.
Yeah.
And it's the puppetry work. You don't question that the Gremlins exist in the real world.
Yeah, well, it's like we said, and we won't say too much now because we go on to a bigger bit about it in our Chucky episode. But, like, when we were watching Chucky, we're like, there's so many instances in that show where Chucky's just sat in a room and he's literally just having a conversation with someone. And you never sit there and think, these aren't two actual real characters. This is a kid talking to, like, a puppet. Like, they give him so much personality, like, that you actually genuinely believe, like, it never takes you out of the world. And it's like, I always say this to you, as stupid as it sounds, and like it's a weird thing to admit on a horror podcast, but like every time I see Kermit the Frog perform Rainbow Connection, like he sat on a log with his little ukulele and he's singing, and I was like, that song always makes me cry. But I was like, it's a fucking puppet, man, but the work is so good that it's like, that is a real character.
And I think this is the beautiful thing with puppetry as well, and, like, animatronic work, is that they exist forever. And, like, a lot of, like, I know puppets break down and they'll get a little bit destroyed, but you can generally, like, somewhere in the world, there is a fucking cupboard with, like, 30 or 40 different Gremlin puppets that are still surviving and okay. Like, they'll probably be in collections.
Probably going to, like, film museums.
Museum stuff like that. And it's like, to go back to Harry Potter, because it's probably the best example in the UK of it, is we have an entire fucking museum, I guess.
It's a studio attraction
where you can go and you can see Aragog. You can see
Buckbeak.
You can go and see Forks, the Voldemort puppets, all of the bits that they made for this movie, and they still exist. They're still physically... The dragon still exists. You can go and see the Hungarian Horntail. the Thestrals, because those things were made in real life and you can go and interact with them. Like, you've been, haven't you? So you can go and bow to Buckbeak and it will be bow back. The spiders will descend on you as you walk through the Forbidden Forest. And things like that, the way you have this thing that exists in the real world and you can continue to show and display, is probably one of the best parts of movie making. The existence of these animatronics and everything like that. And I think they're amazing.
So with this movie, I mean, I know we've just talked a lot about the practical effects and things like that. How do you feel about this movie as a horror film? Like, I think it's a good, really good,
I think it's a good kids horror movie.
Yeah, it's a good, that's what I was going to say, it's a good gateway horror movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a horror for adults. Like, I have never been scared by it either times that I've seen it. And I'm a pansy. But yeah, I think it's a good, like, gateway horror for, like, kids. Because it's just scary enough that it gives you that little kick. Whereas it's still fun, like, hard, and the gremlins are still kind of adorable, even though they're little shits. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's an adult horror film, but I would definitely think of it as, like, a children's horror movie.
How do you feel about it as a Christmas movie?
I mean, it's set at Christmas, so it's a Christmas film. Like,
and they are caroling at one point.
And they are caroling, and there's plenty of references to it being Christmas, so, like, he's a Christmas present, everywhere's decked out for Christmas. But, I mean, it's not specifically a Christmas movie. I don't feel like it's an any time of the year movie that just happens to be set at Christmas. Much like Die Hard.
This movie was released in June, though. Because they released it the same day as Ghostbusters.
Funny.
Imagine going to the cinema in, like, the summer of 1984 and getting to see Gremlins and Ghostbusters back to back. That would have been fucking wild.
Go see JJ.
Also, did you know that this movie and Temple of Doom were responsible for creating the PG-13 rating in America?
I did know that.
Spielberg single-handedly invented the summer blockbuster with Jaws and the PG-13 rating, because they said there are scenes in Temple of Doom. I think Temple of Doom, now, my Indiana Jones knowledge isn't great. I'm pretty sure Temple of Doom is the one where the dude fucking, like, eats people's hearts.
The monkey brains.
Yeah, and, like, they're eating the fucking heart. The guy eats the
I think it's the monkey, like, brains.
Pulls his heart out and stuff. Because they said that they were basically too violent to be PG, but not violent enough to be R-rated.
Yeah.
But this movie actually got reclassified in the UK. So when this movie originally came out, it was, like, a 15. And then they reclassified it fairly recently, I think within the last 10 years or so, to be a 12A, because they said it didn't need to be a 15 anymore. And I was like, I would agree with that. Like, I would go so far as to say this movie's probably a PG, like a strong PG.
Yeah, a strong PG.
Because there's nothing overly graphic in it. The gremlins are kind of scary, I guess.
Yeah.
But there's nothing, like, if you're a kid, that's quite scary. But there's nothing overly, like, bad in this movie. There's, like, basically no, weirdly there's basically no swearing in this movie. Like, nobody really swears. If they do, it's, like, very minimal. There's no blood, really, other than when Billy gets his head cut at the end and when he gets his little hat, like, when the gremlin slashes his hand. But other than that, there's no real blood in this movie. It's a pretty bloodless film. Except for the kitchen scene where they spray all the green gremlin blood everywhere.
But it's green.
Yeah, it's green gremlin blood. So, yeah, I think, to be honest, like, I would have no problem with our children sitting and watching this movie at, like, 5 or 6 years old, probably. The thing is, they're probably likely to see worse on the news nowadays anyway.
Yeah, probably.
And I think that's one of the things when you look back at these movies. Like, they have a certain appeal to them. And, like, I would definitely say that they belong in the horror genre. Like, the thing is, like with Ghostbusters, like, Mark Bernardin said it best when he was talking about Ghostbusters. He was like, if you're young and you don't understand the jokes, then Ghostbusters is a horror movie from a certain point of view.
Mm.
And I think it's the same with this. I think if you're young enough and you don't really understand what's going on, like, this would definitely, you could definitely show this to someone and it would cause them to, like, have nightmares, I think. So I think that there is definitely enough in this movie to make it a horror movie. And, like, the last half of this movie is great. Like, when the gremlins finally arrive and when, like, as the army and they start taking over the town, there's just some really like, funny sequences in this movie. Like, when they go to Mrs. Deagle's house and they fuck with her electric chairlift.
Yeah.
And she goes flying out the window. It's almost like a Home Alone trap. It's so funny. And, like, the bit when they're caroling is really funny as well. And, like, just the whole sequence at the end in, like, the department store when Gizmo's driving around in a little car and, like, Billy's trying to fight Stripe. Although, I will say, there is one part of this movie that made me go, come on, man. Mm. And it's when Billy defends himself with a fucking wooden baseball bat against the chainsaw. And the chainsaw takes forever to go through the baseball bat. And I was like, come on, man. But do you know the scene with
Stripe? I mean, I suppose part of that is weight behind it as well, because you have to be able to put quite a lot of weight on a chainsaw, I guess.
Yeah.
Because you weigh into it to make it go through. So I suppose gremlins don't weigh that much.
Did you know that scene wasn't originally in the script?
No.
It
was a homage to Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah. I did know
that,
actually.
Which is quite cool.
Yeah. Do you want to know another fun fact about this film?
Go on, then.
Kingston Falls is the same set used for Back to the Future.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was one of the Universal backlots.
Nice.
And they used the same lot for Back to the Future. And the cinema's in Back to the Future, obviously, the car goes through the front of the cinema.
Another Steven Spielberg fucking production.
Yeah. He was like, have we still got that lot we used for Gremlins? Or the other way around. I don't know which one came out first.
Because there's a couple of references to E.T. in this movie as well. There's an E.T. doll in the department store that Stripe is behind. And there's also a bit where they walk past the cinema and it's showing A Boy's Life. And A Boy's Life was
the
original production
title, wasn't it?
Yeah, title for E.T. I'm just going to say it. Like, did Spielberg rule the 80s?
Yes.
Like, because you think about movies, like, there's a bunch of movies that I grew up thinking he made because his name was on them. Like, his name is on the box art for this movie. It's like Steven Spielberg Presents. And, like, he produced this, he produced Goonies, he produced all three Back to the Future movies. Mm-hmm. He produced / co-directed, depending on which story you hear, fucking Poltergeist. Then he made all of his own movies as well.
His career was at a real high point in the 80s.
He produced the TV show Amazing Stories. He's a producer on the Twilight Zone movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think he directed one of the segments as well.
Sure.
Maybe. And then, like, he did all of his own shit. So he did, like, fucking Jaws in the late 70s. Then he did E.T., Close Encounters, which was the late 70s, going into the 80s. He did all three Indiana Jones movies in the 80s.
Man was really at a peak in the 80s.
He was fucking... But then he had, like, a fucking career resurrection. Well, he had a career renaissance in the 90s when he smashed out Jurassic Park and Schindler's List in the same year. Mm-hmm. And then he did Jurassic Park 2, which was the first and only sequel he's ever made.
Schindler's List, by the way, is really sad.
Yeah. That's a weird flex, isn't it? Being like, look, I ruled the summer with fucking Jurassic Park, and then I made everyone fucking cry at Christmas with Schindler's List.
Yeah, that movie is really sad.
That's a fucking weird flex,
I watched
flex,
it in
bro.
History class.
Mm.
What we did in history night in school here. We watched Schindler's List and the other one, The Pianist.
But the thing about Spielberg is, like, you can tell this has the hallmarks of a Spielberg movie on it. And it's kind of like, to go back to Ghostbusters Afterlife a little bit, they were saying that Ghostbusters Afterlife had that Amblin kind of Spielberg-y feel to it a lot. I've seen that a lot. And I can kind of get it, because you look at the movies that he directs and then you look at the movies he produces, It is kind of like a family in a small town that, like, gets put into, like, an extraordinary situation. Like, they're having to look after a fucking E.T. or a fucking, like, in this case, a gremlin or, like, Poltergeist. You know, Spielberg, when he produces, he picks movies that are very similar.
Mm.
But he had a lot of say in this. There's a lot of stuff in this movie that he tried to get cut out He wanted cut out.
It's really funny, though, with Spielberg, because, like, everyone always says, like, oh, like, Spielberg, he's, like, one of the greatest producers, directors, whatever, of our time. And I look back on Spielberg's career, and I don't think I honestly like any Spielberg movies except Schindler's List. And I watched it once, I'll never watch it again. It broke my heart, but It is a very good film. But I don't think I like any Spielberg films.
I find Spielberg very similar to how I deal with Tarantino.
Yeah.
I think the movies that Tarantino wrote that someone else directed are better than any of the movies that he ever directed himself. And it's the same with Spielberg. I think the movies that Spielberg produced, I enjoy way more than most of the movies he directed. I think Steven Spielberg's made two perfect movies in his career.
Mm-hmm.
Jaws. and Jurassic Park, because you know how I feel about both those movies.
I know how you feel about both those movies.
And then I really loved Ready Player One, but that's mainly because I love the book. And like,
oh, for some reason, I always forget he's involved in Ready Player One, to be fair.
Yeah, he directed Ready Player One, and he directed AI. Like, 75% of AI is him.
That is true, I do like AI.
Because Stanley Kubrick died during the making of it,
but again,
so Spielberg finished it off.
AI, I've seen it maybe once or twice, and it makes me really sad. So, yeah, I don't... It's one of those weird things with him. Like, I don't think I'm a huge fan of Spielberg. Like, whenever I think of any of the films he's made, I'm like... I think I feel the same way as you. I feel like I've seen a lot of movies he's produced that I quite enjoy, but I don't think I've seen any that he's directed outside of, like, Ready Player One and stuff that I was... Oh, wait, War Horse, I guess. But I think out of all of the stuff he's done, I think there's maybe 6 or 7 films that I'm like, oh, yeah, I really enjoy that. And man's directed, like, fucking 70 bajillion movies.
Well, I think there were a few arguments on the set of this movie where he got his way some of the time and then he didn't get his way. Like, he wanted the Santa story cut out. But then relented and was like, it's Joe Dante's movie, like, I'll let him kind of leave that in. But he also kept changing the Gremlin designs.
Yeah, no, I know, I saw that.
Which is kind of like, but then the thing is, like, and he's responsible for Gizmo being the hero.
Yeah.
And I read, there's a really funny thing that I read. So, like, in the end of the movie, when Gizmo pulls the blind and lets the light out and that's what kills Stripe, they shot a sequence where Billy does it as well.
Yeah.
So they both pull a blind. But Spielberg said that he viewed Gizmo as the hero of this movie, so Gizmo deserved to have the heroic moment. And they did an interview or like a video audio commentary with Joe Dante and Zach Gilligan. And Zach Galligan, said that he was really surprised to find the scene where he doesn't pull the thing in the movie. And Joe Dante went, do you want to take a guess as to who idea that was? And Zach Gallagher went, no, because I'd quite like to continue working
with him again.
Yeah. So, I thought it was really funny.
It did the math there. So out of 57 films that he has directed, I like 6 movies.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't think I even like that many.
I like 6.
I love Jaws. I think Jaws is a perfect film. I think Jurassic Park is a perfect film.
Mm-hmm.
I think The Lost World's good. I like War of the Worlds, even though it's nowhere near as good as H.G. Wells' original story. And I liked Ready Player One. Outside of that, I don't think there's any other Spielberg movies that I like.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, I like Schindler's List, and it's a weird thing to say that. Like, I appreciate Schindler's List for the movie that it is and how personal it was to him and his family, and I fully appreciate what he did with it, but it's not a movie where I can say I like that movie. Yeah. Like,
so mine are Hook.
Oh, fuck yeah, I forgot you directed Hook.
Schindler's List. AI, Catch Me If You Can, because that movie is amazing, War Horse, Ready Player One. Is that 6? Did I miss one? I don't know. But yeah, I think that's kind of it. And to say man has directed 57 films, I think I can safely say I'm not a big fan of the movies he directs.
See, the thing, my problem with Spielberg is, and it's kind of like, it's more prevalent, I think, in the movies that he directs that he has full control over, is I always hate, for the majority, unless it's a film that's based on something historical, because then he can't really fuck with history. The movies that he has written and directed, or someone that he's chosen to direct, all tend to have happy endings. And like, I don't like that he makes these really saccharine kind of like happy to be fair, like Gremlins doesn't really have a happy ending. Like, a bunch of people get fucking murdered, and Mr. Wing's like, I'm taking Gizmo away because you fucking assholes can't look after him.
Yeah.
But, like, that's my main problem with Spielberg, is he's kind of, like, as, like, Dawson puts it in Dawson's Creek, because he idolises him, he's, like, he's the filmmaker that, like, everything works out fine. Like, he lives in this idyllic fantasy world where, like, everything's going to be fine, and, like, the guy will get the girl, and, like, the hero will save the day, blah, blah, blah. And I'm, like, to me, like, I like to have more shades of grey in my film, and I think that's kind of, for the most part, why I don't really like Spielberg films. But I love Gremlins and I love Poltergeist. I think Poltergeist is fucking legit. Like, and we are going to talk about that many months from now.
Okay, well, I think we've gone really off topic and I feel like we need to wrap this up because we just keep getting dragged into other things. So, I'm going to ask you for a change.
Okay.
Final thoughts and rating you would give this film.
So, Gremlins is a classic. I mean, there's no two ways about it. Like, whether you like it or not, it's one of those movies that has really stayed the test of time and it's really become a massive thing in popular culture to the point where, like, even now, Gremlins merchandise is still as popular, if not more popular, than it was years ago. Case in point, we went into a toy shop yesterday and there was two fucking life-size Gremlins hanging from the ceiling. And then Primark are selling Gremlins Christmas jumpers currently.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, basically, if you could put Gizmo's face on it, you can buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of those movies that, like, it's an untraditional, traditional Christmas movie in the sense that it's not a Christmas movie like how you think the Santa Claus is or Elf is,
mm-hmm.
where it's Christmas-focused and it leaves you that, like nice, fuzzy Christmas feeling. But it's a movie that I watched a lot. It's always on at Christmas.
Yeah.
It always gets re-released in the cinema at least once a year at Christmas, so you can get a few extra bucks and, like, people can take their kids to see it at the cinema and stuff. And for me, personally, it's one of those movies that, like, because I saw it so young and because I grew up with it,
mm-hmm.
like there are moments of it that have become, like, in, like, the way my family communicate with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we're in the house, like, if I'm, like, in the house and, like, it's dark and someone puts a light on, I go, ah, no, bright light, like, and things like that. So I think the fact that it's kind of, like, still remains in the zeitgeist and in, like, the relevancy of pop culture, and people are always, like Ghostbusters, people are like, when are we going to get Gremlins 3? When are we going to get Gremlins 3? And they keep talking about Gremlins 3, and I don't think they're ever going to make it, but there's still a demand for it, and there's still a demand for these characters. And I think, like we said, it's a very important movie in the kind of aspect of, like, family horror.
Mm.
This is a movie, like, if you want to get your kids into horror, you can show them this and not fear that they're going to have, like, horrendous nightmares or be, like, scarred for life. Plus it's also a sick Christmas movie, so you've, like, put two things off your list. To me, I think the movie, watching it now, I've not seen this movie in probably about 15 years. So rewatching it today, there was a lot of the movie that I forgot. I'd forgotten how, like, well-paced it was. But I do think that because of those animatronics and because of those puppets, the movie still holds up today as well as it did 37 years ago. And I still think it's a really, really fucking good movie. For me, I think it's going to be a solid 4 out of 5 just because of A, the nostalgia, B, how well it's held up, and C, just because fucking Gremlins rule. Like, they're awesome. Like, they're one of the coolest fucking horror creations of all time. And they're very versatile. You can put them in a lot of different situations. And I think that's another thing that I love about them, is that you can kind of, like, I think they've been used in, like, marketing for, like, products. Like, I think Dell or something used them, like, years ago to sell, like, fucking printer insurance or something. So to me, like, I just think that the fact that they're so versatile and so iconic makes part of this movie why it's so fucking awesome. What about you?
So I obviously did not see this film as a child. We've discussed this, and I feel like this film maintains its popularity purely based on nostalgia. Like, I don't think the film is actually good enough to have the reverence that it has, and I think that the reverence is at this point purely based on nostalgia. And because I don't have that nostalgia for it, it just bypasses me. I think Gizmo's cute. I think the Gremlins are amazing. I think the puppetry work is really cool. But I don't think the film's as good as it's kind of built up to be. Because this is one of those films, there's a few in my life that I refuse to watch. Because people will sit there and they will go, oh, you've never seen it, but it's, like, the greatest film ever made. And that happens a lot with Gremlins. And I feel like it's one of those films that has been so built up by people that it is never going to live up to the hype for anyone who hasn't seen it. Because it's not as good as people think it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I kind of get what you're saying.
But I don't think it's a dreadful movie. I just don't think it is worth the hype that it gets. But I think that hype is purely based on nostalgia, which I get because I have films that I loved as a child that I will sit here and say is absolutely amazing, and someone will watch it, Goonies, for example, and will be like, what the fuck is this?
See, I think
why do you love this film so much?
I think this is the interesting thing, and I think 80s movies suffer from this rose-tinted glasses that don't really work as a first-time viewing as an adult 30 years after context.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of movies in the 80s that seem to divide opinion. And I think, again, it's like you say, it depends on when you see it and the effect it has in your life. So I was born literally in the middle of the 80s. So a lot of these movies were like movies that I'd kind of discovered when I was quite young, a few years after they'd come out. So like for me, I grew up with movies like Karate Kid and Ghostbusters and Gremlins. And those are the movies that I fucking loved as a kid. But then I also saw things like Back to the Future when I was a kid, but I don't like any of the Back to the Future movies. Yeah. I don't like any of the Indiana Jones movies. And this... I think it's the same as like what you were saying. Like, I saw Lost Boys way, way, way after it came out. And I kind of looked at that movie, I guess the same way that you look at this, of like, I understand why people love it, but fuck me, that movie is definitely not for me.
Yeah. See, because I'm the other foot with Lost Boys. I saw Lost Boys for the first time when I was like 14.
Mm.
And I fell in love, and I've been in love with it ever since. I adore that film. Yes, it's not an amazing movie. It has plenty of plot holes and issues, but I will still, no matter what, be like, it's great because I'm super nostalgic for it. It was a massive part of my teen years. And I feel like that's what Gremlins is to a lot of people.
Yeah.
If you don't have that nostalgia, you kind of watch it going, I get why you love it, but I don't think it's as good as you seem to think it is.
Yeah. But I think that's, like, the interesting thing as well, when they mine 80s nostalgia for, like, modern TV shows. Yeah. Like, they have to be very picky. Like, Stranger Things is a prime example of that. Because there's going to be an abundance of people in the audience that are like, that's really fucking cool. Or there's going to be people that are like, I don't get it. Like, why would kids in 2020, like, still give a fuck about, like, Gremlins or Ghostbusters or like, you know, when they weren't there? And I think that's always going to be the thing, and that's what I was saying. I think the 80s, especially for movies like this, is the most divisive because again, it depends on when you saw those movies and like you say, nostalgia attached to it. So no, I completely understand what you're saying. I completely get what you mean.
So I think ratings wise for this, I'd give it 2, and most of that is purely based on the practical effects.
Man, the puppets alone deserve a 3.
No, I'm knocking off, like, a massive chunk of points for how irresponsible Billy is.
Billy's a dick.
He's an absolute asshole. And that's why it's a 2.
Although, I was...
I would have given it a -2 if it was purely based on how much of a dick Billy is. But those puppets really do pump it up, man.
I will say one thing, though. Zach Galligan was the first person making the movie that turned around and questioned the logic of the midnight rule. Because he's like, surely it's midnight somewhere. And then Joe Dante was like, it doesn't fucking matter. We just made fun of all this shit in the sequel anyway. Yeah. And Joe Dante actually prefers the second one to this one.
Fair enough.
Which I think is fucking hilarious.
Have you got any final things you want to add?
Not really. I mean, I think it's one of those movies, like, I would still recommend it. If you've never seen it, I think it's a really good movie. And I definitely think that it's a movie that, like, for the next generation of horror fans, it's a movie that horror fans, like, children can watch.
Mm.
I love this movie, and I think I don't really have anything else to say. Just you know, if you get a Mogwai for Christmas, just be fucking responsible with it.
Be a responsible Mogwai owner, guys.
Also, if I was Mr. Wing, I would have fucking whooped ass.
That's fair.
I would have whooped ass if I'd found out my Mogwai had been stolen, and then I would have whooped ass if I'd found out what they'd done to him.
Yeah.
Mr. Wing is far too chill for that fucking irresponsible family. I would have whooped ass, but that's just me. I would have whooped that kid's ass as well that fucking sold him the Mogwai. Mm. That's why you never see his nephew again, or his grandson, because he's fucking killed him.
Fair enough. Right, well, I think that's all we've got to say on Gremlins.
Yeah.
So, do you want to do the wrap-up? Because I can never remember what any of our social media is.
Yeah, as stated at the top of the episode, social media, find us at SIMAHFpod on Twitter, So I'm Married a Horror Fan, Instagram and Tumblr. All those will be in the link in the description of this on all of our social media channels. Also, don't forget, Wednesday we are dropping our full season one review of Chucky. Full spoilers, come get some Chucky on Wednesday. And then Friday we will be looking at our top 5 horror movies of 2021. Mine is literally just going to be Psycho Goreman, Psycho Goreman, Psycho Goreman, Psycho Goreman, Psycho Goreman, Willy's Wonderland.
Fair enough.
But yeah, so that's what we've got lined up for the rest of this week. As always, I've been Simon.
I've been Lee.
And we'll see you in the next one. Take care, guys. Bye.
Bye.